Welcome into the CHGO White Sox post-game show, coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices. Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
Our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow Herb at Ecknerwall23. Follow me at Sean underscore W underscore Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO underscore White Sox. We are being produced today by Sarah.
Hi.
Hello. Make sure you're hitting the thumbs up button on this Saturday. Thank you to Doctor Who for joining us. Brian Marshall. I don't know if that's G-Easy or Geezy.
Geezy.
Squish, Fred, Chris, thanks for hanging
some
out
new
with
names.
Us.
Let's go.
Some new names. Hit that thumbs up button. Make sure you're subscribing if you haven't as we join you after a White Sox loss 7-6 to the Detroit Tigers in 10 innings. Today's show is presented by Factor Meal Kits. Use code CHGOSOX50 to get 50% off your first Factor box and free wellness shots for life with any active subscription at factormeals.com/CHGOSOX50. Jason saying we are depressed, and Herb, that hello wasn't too enthusiastic.
It wasn't.
You having fun?
I was having fun today at the ball game. It was an exciting ball game. The White Sox finally reached second base, and they touched home plate a couple times this game. But, of course, we're going to have questions about Pedro's bullpen management and why they stopped hitting and executing after, I think, the fifth inning. So it's a disappointing loss because they were crushing Kenta Maeda today, and they let him off the hook.
Yeah, they did let him off the hook. And that's the thing, too. When I first tuned into this game, it was 10 minutes late, and it was 3-0 Tigers. Yeah. And I was like, great, we could just not even pay attention. This one's done. Mm-hmm. And then they gave me hope.
Yeah.
And they gave me a lot of hope. They had a 5-3 lead. I think it even got up to 6-3.
Yeah.
6-3 lead for the White Sox, and then they ended up blowing it, which isn't super surprising, but it really, I don't know, they had so many opportunities, including a 6-6 tie ball game where you had, what, I'm blanking on the guy's name, Lang, Dickie Waring, Alex Lang, just not throwing strikes at all, giving the White Sox walk after walk after walk. You had the bases loaded, and then you end up having Aloy ground into a ending double play, and you have a 6-6 lead, and you're not able to turn it into anything. It's just more disappointment, which is great. I didn't know I could be disappointed more and more.
Yeah, like, after that hot spring, and you know, spring stats are neither here nor there, you would think that Aloy would come into the season with a little bit better execution. He was bad today, absolutely horrendous today. And the bat that was before Luis Roberts in that inning, where Yoan Moncada, I think he had a 3-0 count on him, then 3-1, and he's swinging 3-1 at a curveball that's not in the zone. As you said, Dickie Waring, Alex Lang was everywhere but the strike zone, and then eventually Yoan strikes out there. He wants you. He is willing to give you that walk. Take it. Like, put the bat in your shoulder and take the walk. Remember, you have the guy that just hit two home runs right behind you. And I won't go hard too much on Yoan Moncada, but that execution, that process, that execution was terrible for him. You need base runners there. You need to get your guy behind you on. And he, and we'll get to him, in Luis Robert Jr., is a star. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be a superstar. People will know his name, not just baseball people. People who are just casual fans will be like, yes, Luis Robert Jr., one of the best baseball players in MLB, and a guy that it needs to be reckoned with. And then the at-bat after that with Aloy just grounding the ball right to third base. Like, we don't need that. Bases loaded, elevation. With one out, elevation. You're in that spot, in the four spot, to hit the ball in the goddamn air. What are we doing?
What's Herb's favorite U2 song?
Elevation.
Exactly. I knew that. I didn't have to ask it.
Well, actually, it's bad, but I didn't want to say that. And he is bad.
You think elevation's bad?
No. My favorite U2 song is bad.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I hear you on the elevation point. I hear you even on the, you know, the chorus and the background vocals. So it's pretty good. Ooh. The 3-0 count, though, is frustrating that Moncada ends up striking out in that situation, because Maldonado before him walks, Benintendi before him walks, you get into a 3-0 count and you're just not able to capitalize. And then even behind him too, Robert's able to walk. And honestly, I think obviously the home run's huge. The two home runs that he hit are huge. The single as well was nice from Robert Jr. A lot of hustle from Robert Jr. as well today. Made a great defensive play, as you mentioned, in the ninth inning. It is frustrating from Moncada having that strikeout there, but we know how disgusting Lang is.
Yeah.
And I do just want to give some credit to him, because those last two pitches that he did get him swinging at were fairly disgusting. Like, I he found the pitching there, and I think once he got to Robert, Robert actually made him throw strikes. Like, Robert was like, if you're not throwing me a fastball, I'm not swinging at all. And I think that was huge growth there from Robert. So, if anything, I get the frustration from Moncada, because you think that he has that, what's it called, that profile to walk more and to be the guy in that situation to walk, and him not drawing that walk, obviously frustrating. But Robert to then, when Lang has found it, to be able to lay off all of those curveballs, I think that's huge for Robert Jr. That inning, obviously frustrating. Any other major frustrations before we get into the excitement around superstar Luis Robert Jr.?
Yeah, it started off, as you said, 3-0, and the first hit was a broken bat, what I thought would have been a double, and it looked like Dominic Fletcher misplayed that ball. After all this talk about defense, I'm like, what's going on in that first play? And then, like, Soroka didn't have it initially. He couldn't find it. And then he settled in and eventually gave up that home run late to Canna, but Canna had a day. But you can't be too mad at Soroka, but I was kind of miffed about how Dominic Fletcher played that first ball. It didn't go down as an error. It was just I think he got too close to the wall in his first actual game playing at guaranteed rate. So I'll give him a little leeway. But, you know, if you can't preach defense, and get this guy, Dominic Fletcher, for defense of purposes, and then his first play, his first chance, it looks like he kind of mishandles it.
Yeah, not great from Fletcher in his first game, but two, like, standout performances for sure. One, I want to give a shout-out to Corey Lee, because we're talking about that seventh inning. He ends up pitch running for Maldonado. Then with the Benintendi walk, he gets on second base. One of those pitches, I think it was the last one, gets into the dirt, gets away from the catcher on the Tiger side, and he ends up getting to third base. Didn't mean anything because the White Sox weren't able to drive him in, but heads-up base running from Corey Lee. It was nice to see him.
That's what you need. And also, another thing I had a problem with is, and I know we're probably going to get more in depth, and we'll talk to Vinny about what Pedro said about this, but Dominic Leone pitched on Thursday. He pitched all right in the ninth inning of Thursday's game, and then you bring him back today. You have a person in Steven Wilson who you acquired, would have been a better person at the 6-4 lead at the time you had. I understand he was probably trying to set up something, but you can't set up something if you don't have that lead. And I think it was time to shut down the Tigers right there at 6-4. They had already had that home run by Canna the inning before, I believe. And then now you just had to stop that momentum. And Dominic Leone, throughout his career, has not been that guy. Steven Wilson has been that guy as far as last year. So go to a guy that you have more trust in, that has done more stuff in the major leagues. I know he doesn't have familiarity with most of these guys because most of these guys are new, but if you're going to be saying, hey, which guy should I go to first in a lead with high leverage, Steven Wilson would have been the call for me.
Well, and honestly, I don't understand the way that they put Wilson out there. I think that he was a fantastic beach boy. But when you're using a guy that has a sweeper that he uses 60% of the time, you want to use him against righties.
Yeah.
Because notably, sweepers are a pitch that have strong platoon splits to the point where righties really can't hit them, and that's the only pitch that lefties can absolutely smash. And we see on both of the lefties that he ended up facing, Meadows and McKinstry, both of those guys got pitches inside to hit. And I think both of them were sweepers that they were just, you know, a little bit too early on and ended up pulling foul. I don't love even the way that they rolled out this bullpen, because you mentioned Leone, but I don't even think that they put Wilson out in the best spot. I would have rather seen him up against righties, especially, you know, you see what Riley Green does and Mark Canna does to Dominic Leone. Hey, let's see what Steven Wilson could do. And, you know, you end up using Davey in the 10th I would have rather seen him than Leon today. So I'm not in love with what happened today, but let's recap the game. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll get into more of what pissed us off and what made us happy, especially with Luis Robert Jr. in the top of the first. Parker Meadows tripled to right, and then Spencer Torkelson drove him in later on with Riley Green getting on by a walk and Kerry Carpenter getting on by a single. Mark Canha drove in both Green and Torkelson, making it 3-0 at the top of the first in the
that was a good play by Dominic Fletcher. The single right there by Canha, he throws out the runner trying to advance to third with a cannon of a throw. It was great.
So I mean, you know, he's young, you know, he's a young 26.
I mean, to me, yeah, that's young as fuck. In baseball, is it making your debut on a team?
Old. Nothing wrong with being 26.
No.
And then in the bottom of the first, Benintendi got on with a single into right field. Moncada then basically just took Benintendi's place on a fielder's choice. But it doesn't matter because Luis Robert Jr. had one hell of an at-bat against Kenta Maeda on 10 pitches. A 10-pitch at-bat, Robert on the last pitch hit a bomb 450 feet to left center. So that makes it 3-2 to the Sox. And then in the bottom of the second, they kept it up. Braden Shumake, of all people, hit a homer into the opposing bullpen to tie it up at 3-3. Then in the bottom of the third, the White Sox kept up the scoring. Moncada tripled, a one-out triple after Benintendi grounded out to first. And Robert said, hey, that first one was nice. Why not do it again? Let's do it again, right? It wasn't
eight pitches this time.
Wasn't a 10-pitch at-bat, but 18 pitches in his first two at-bats, resulting in two home runs. So the White Sox take a 5-3 lead there. Soroka gets through four, only allowing three, and the White Sox give him a little bit more of a cushion. Shumake ends up scoring as Lopez is caught stealing at second, but with runners on first and third, Shumake runs home with a throw down to second, and Shumake makes it in there. We heard a lot about Shumake's speed in the minors, and we saw him be hurt at spring training, and we were like, oh, this guy's probably not even going to make it on the opening day roster. And hey, by the fourth inning, he's got a homer and a steal of home, giving the White Sox a 6-3 lead. So Braden Shumake's pretty good in my book.
And I was like, at that point, I was like, maybe Pedro ball, fast. Yeah. Let's go.
Literally. And then you got Corey Lee, of all people, on that one ball getting away earlier, as we mentioned at the top of the seventh, stealing a bag. I mean, they played fast. Mm-hmm. They even had a hit and run, too, that ended up having Shumake get to third on that play, and, you know, Lopez singles. So, you know, really decent fast baseball there. Soroka did give up a homer to Canha in the fifth, making it 6-4. And after the fourth inning, the White Sox just did not score, which is typical for the White Sox. Surprising that they got six runs in general, but then top of the seventh, that's when things got hairy. Dominic Leon comes in, gives up a homer to Riley Green, makes it 6-5, and then Canha doubles to left. We then see Tim Hill come in. Carson Kelly singled to center, scoring Canha, making it 6-6. We talked about the bottom of the seventh where, you know, Alex Lang really couldn't find it, but they really didn't get any damage as Will Vest ended up relieving Lang and getting the Jimenez ground into a double play. And then the final run came into the top of the 10th when the ghost runner's on second base and Carson Kelly just puts one right up the middle and there's no one there. It's just a nice, well-hit ball. Mm-hmm. Nothing Garcia can do about it. He struck out two. Got a nice, easy ground out to second to end the inning. Just didn't get that Carson Kelly one. White Sox offense didn't have enough there. So that's how it's a 7-6 loss for the Sox. Let's take a break. We'll talk more about how great Luis Robert Jr. is because, I mean, that should be the thing that we should lean most into.
Yeah, because otherwise he's just going to be depressing podcast for an hour. We don't want to do that.
We got 160 more games to do that. I want to let you know about our friends over at Ray CDJR. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? If you are, then we have some great news for you. Our partner, Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram in Fox Lake, is celebrating their Jeep Celebration Month event all month long. And do you know what that means, Herb?
I don't. Tell me.
Well, it means you'll be able to rave about their savings on a wide selection of inventory. For a limited time, lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo Altitude for $439 a month for 39 months. And if that Grand Cherokee isn't big enough for you, check out the third row and lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited L for $479 a month for 39 months. At Ray CDJR, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicago's largest inventories and drive home with more money in your pocket than you'd expect thanks to the Raise Price Promise. Don't miss out. Shop great deals all month long and save big because Ray CDJR makes buying a new vehicle more affordable than ever. And that's not all. Just for listening to CHGO, you can get a free oil change when you mention CHGO at the service center or mention CHGO when you book online at RayCDJR/service. But you have to schedule before April 1st. So if you're on the market for a new vehicle, then you have to check out the team at Ray, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram because they're the only team we recommend. Visit them today on Route 12 in Fox Lake. For more information, visit RayCDJR in Fox Lake or RayCDJR.com. Serving the community since 1963.
At Factor, they think that eating better is easy with their delicious and ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. You can discover a wide variety of easy options for an entire day, like pancakes, smoothies, and more. Factor meals are ready to eat and heat, and there is no prepping, no cooking, and no cleanup needed. Also with Factor meals, you can get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you are looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout. Every meal is dietitian approved and nutritious and delicious. What you need to do right now is head on over to factormeals.com/CHGOSOCKS50 and use the code CHGOSOCKS50 to get 50% off. That's code CHGOSOCKS50 at factormeals.com/CHGOSOCKS50 to get 50% off.
And Sarah is going to try to show off her Factor meal kit that she heated up last night. What'd you get?
I picked the vegetarian kit. And so this was like a quinoa, carrot, broccoli with like a peanut sauce. It was spicy. It was delicious and nutritious.
Nice. I had the jalapeno cheddar chicken. Mm-hmm. And that one was very, very good. Very nutritious and I think just clean. Surprisingly, yeah. It is takeout level of a meal.
Yeah, and I had some of the wellness shots, too. What the one with the ginger. It really wakes you up.
They're sharp.
Oh, man.
I took one of those when we first got them, mm-hmm. and I just was not expecting the power. I was like, I'll take two of these.
Yeah.
One will keep you well.
Yeah.
Just do that daily. All right. Got a couple comments that I want to get to. Just want to quiz her real quick. Mm-hmm. First off, Christopher Devine did say logistical question. Do you guys do a pregame and postgame for every game? No. We don't do pregames that much anymore unless it's more of a special situation. We did opening day, but we just didn't see that there was a huge real audience for the pregame shows. But we do a postgame show 5 days for sure each and every week. And I think right now we're in day 3 of 9 straight days of working. Yeah. So we'll have you covered for the next 6 days of White Sox baseball. Woo! Not every day, but we are active every day on social media about the White Sox some way or the other.
Yeah, I think that we used to do last year where we would do a pregame maybe if the series is opening, like a new series would open up. I don't know if this Monday when the Braves come to town, it's an early 1:10 start, if we're going to do a pregame. But as Sean said, 5 postgame shows each week, guaranteed for you. Well, if there's games, we'll do 5 shows a week.
Right. I mean, if there's an off day like yesterday, hey, we'll do an off day show and have a nice time talking about if Luis Robert can be a superstar. Do you think so?
Oh, my God.
I mean, hey, let's have this quiz. I teased the quiz but didn't actually give the quiz. Who had the 3 hardest hit balls for the Chicago White Sox today?
I'm going to go with Luis Robert Jr.
Okay, Luis Robert Jr. is your first guess.
All right, then I'm going to go with Braden Shumake. He had a home run.
Oh, okay. No.
Oh, my second one is Luis Robert Jr.
Oh, okay, your second guess is Luis Robert Jr. And then who's your third guess?
Luis Robert Jr.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Luis Robert Jr. hit the 3 hardest balls for the White Sox today. He's basically the whole damn team. A 111.9 exit velocity on the first home run against Maeda, then 104.8, love that station, on the second homer, and then on the single in the fifth, 104.4. So,
which he hit opposite field.
Yes. I mean, he's
inside out of that one.
He's just, I don't know. Like, we talked about him being a superstar, and we saw in 2021 when he had that like comeback from his injury that he had like an average of 335. Mm-hmm. I know that he talked about walking more this season, and that was a goal for him this offseason, and he had a walk against Lang. So he got on 4 times today. That's pretty damn good. But he might be a guy that has like a 320 average and like a 500 slugging, and he might be the most exciting baseball player in all of Chicago, and no one wants to watch him because they're revolted by this baseball team.
Yeah, Kenta Maeda, hardest fastball today versus Luis Robert was 89.2. Or, nope, he threw a 90-mile-per-hour one. But that first at-bat, it was a 10-pitch at-bat because he could not get anything past Luis Robert. When he tried to, Luis Robert just fouled off 4 balls in a row. So, ball one, ball two, the third pitch was a swing and strike by Luis Robert. Then he foul-tipped the fourth pitch. The fifth pitch was a ball in the dirt. Then 6, 7, 8, and 9 were all foul balls. So, slider, slider, fastball, slider. At that time, you've seen everything that Kenta Maeda goes with. The splitters, the slider, the fastball. Pretty much, that's the whole arsenal. And Kenta's like, I'm tired of this at bat. I'm going to try to pass him with a 90-mile-per-hour fastball. And Luis Robert said, good luck. And he murdered that ball. Absolutely destroyed. Like, he provided all the power of that ball. Like I said, it's a 90-mile-per-hour fastball. Good luck to every pitcher who doesn't have premium stuff against Luis Robert. I know when I was researching this game that but previous that this is the 8th start that Kenta Maeda has had versus the White Sox. 7 of those games, they've hit at least one home run versus him. They have seen him and crushed him. And Luis Robert Jr., every time they saw him, or every time Luis Robert Jr. saw him, crushed the ball. I want to address more is that A.J. Hinch, after the Yoan Moncada triple, base is open. First base is wide the fuck open. 4. That's what you got to start doing to Luis Robert Jr. And that's why you got to have the step up from Aloy. That's why you got to step up from Andrew Vaughn, who I thought had a decent game today. You have to have those guys be dangerous as they usually are, because then you don't have people just pitching around Luis Robert Jr. Because people are looking at this game right now and they're like, okay, Yoan's all right. Andrew sucks. Or Andrew Benintendi sucks. Aloy sucks. We're not going to let Luis Robert Jr. beat us. When he hit that home run, I just yelled at A.J. Hinch and Kenta Maeda. I'm like, that's 8 pitches versus him in this second at bat. You could have just walked him. It would have been quicker and much more effective for your team. It's just dumb.
I hear you, like, for sure, but I guess that's why when you go into the 7th and he has that at bat against Lang, who has all this disgusting stuff, and he's spitting on pitches like that, I think that shows that I think people think that he would be an easy out. And I think you're just seeing the development of Luis Robert Jr., where he might be taking that next level from star to superstar. Like, that's what I'm just saying. You have a 10-pitch at-bat and an 8-pitch at-bat where you're just uncorking. Like, that 10th pitch, you're like, waiting for a fastball, he finally throws you a fastball and you hit it 450 feet. And then the next one, you take him 8 pitches deep, and then you're doing the same exact thing. And then you have the great single going the opposite way. Like, he does just look like a different hitter. And I think that the former scouting report says we could probably get this guy with, chase out of the zone.
Yep.
And he said, no, I ain't doing that. Throw me a strike, see how far it goes. Like, I truly think it's just Robert growing. Hopefully we see managers get more afraid of Robert, and I think that would just show the signs of growth for him. Anything else? Or you want to take a break?
I'll take a break, but yeah, it's good to have him on the team because, as Bloney says, 2024 Sox, Luis Robert Jr. and a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, he is the team. We're going to go talk to one of our teammates in just a second. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go out to Guaranteed Rate Field and chat with Vinny Duber. But first, we want to let you know about our friends over at Prize Picks. They're the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and they are the easy and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. You got Herb's team on tonight, and whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high stakes basketball moments this time of year and baseball moments. But get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Be a part of the action on Prize Picks for both men's and women's college basketball, and you could turn You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. And I think they're just about to tip off. We also have a Blackhawks watch party. So, hey, if you're going to be watching some college basketball, you're going to be watching the watch party and maybe pick a little over on or a more on a Connor Bedard prop. Maybe you pick more on a
shots on goal. Yeah.
An Illini prop, and there you go. And you watch the winnings roll in. But go check out Prize Picks, prizepicks.com/CHGO, and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO, and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
One of the things I did on Prize Picks, I think I did a more than 3.5 games with multiple home runs from Luis Robert Jr.
We got one.
Yep.
Sixth in his career. And hey, you mentioned him hitting Maeda hard. His first career home run or was off Maeda. Hmm. So July 26, 2020.
Wow. Hey, full circle. Charlie the Bacon Guy is based out of Woodridge, Illinois, and he makes craft bacon and bacon jams for over 35 different flavors. Bacon and bacon jam are naturally cured, preservative-free products. No ingredients that Charlie can't pronounce himself involved in the process, unlike most store-bought bacon. Ethorbate and sodium ascorbate, for example. Vacuum sealed and freezes perfectly. Bacon lasts in the package up to 60 days in the fridge, 1 week after the seal is broken, and 9 months in the freezer. Bacon jam lasts about 90 days in the fridge and up to 1 year in the freezer. But if you're freezing bacon in the if you're keeping bacon in the freezer, you're doing it wrong. I mean, you're supposed to be eating it and cooking it and enjoying it, especially that bacon jam, just right out of the jar. Just put it on your spoon. Check out the awesome merch, beanies, hats, t-shirts, stickers, or coffee mugs that Charlie has on his website. They have flavors for their bacon are maple pepper, chorizo, French toast, honey chipotle, Cajun, jardinera, raspberry chipotle, Maui Waui, which I have those last two at my house right now. Bacon jam flavors are original, bourbon, mango habanero, and cherry jalapeno. Bacon jam goes perfectly on anything. Put it on scrambled eggs, toast, with or without jelly, crackers, burgers, grilled cheese, charcuterie boards, cinnamon rolls, pizza, or Charlie's favorite, the spoon. The Bacon Vault is got all the flavors that Charlie's made in the past. If it's not currently available, give Charlie about 2 weeks and he'll make it for you. Starting now, you can save 10% on your order at charliethebaconguy.com when you use the code CHGO at checkout. You can pick it up, which is the most efficient way for you. He can deliver it to you or meet you halfway, even ship it to you. He makes the bacon so you can bring it home. Follow him on Instagram at charliethebaconguy. On Twitter at CZ the Bacon Guy. Email him at charliethebaconguy.com. No, sorry, charliethebaconguy@gmail.com. And his website is charliethebaconguy.com.
Thank you, Herb. What's your favorite again?
What's up?
What's your favorite flavor again?
Raspberry Chipotle.
Ooh, I don't think we had that one.
Maui Waui also at the house. I haven't tried yet.
That was probably the best day of working here. We've been working here three years, and that will never be topped.
And subsequently, the days after just lingered of bacon. And there's still bacon in there. I don't know whose it is. If they don't come and claim it after a while, I'm just gonna fry it up.
Do you have a George Foreman grill somewhere?
No.
I don't think we could put that in the microwave.
No,
we don't have an oven here.
I had a former girlfriend who one time, I know we want to get Vinny on, but let me get this story in.
Oh, Vinny's probably happily waiting and listening to this
story. I had a former girlfriend back in the day. We woke up on a Saturday. Something. She's like, you want me to hook you up some breakfast? I was like, baby, let's go. All right, let's eat. She put that shit in the microwave. Damn near left right then. I mean, we broke up after a while, but that was probably the beginning of the end. She broke up with me, but, you know, whatever. She probably saw the disappointment on my face when she put that shit in the microwave. Sorry for swearing again, but it was so disgusting. Rubbery-ass bacon, no. Store-bought bacon and eggs in a cup that just, like, rose up. I was like, what are we doing?
I think, honestly, microwaves have gotten a lot better since 1980, so maybe you should try it again.
What do you think I'm dating? How old do you think I am? What the hell, 1980?
Let's go out to Guaranteed Rate Field and chat with our guy, Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. hi, Vinny. How are you?
What's up, guys?
We're feeling a little loopy. I can kind of predict what Pedro Grifol probably said about this game, and I don't think he's wrong. I think that there was probably a lot of hearkening about the effort that we saw from this team today. Am I wrong?
I mean, yeah, but I was a little, I don't know if surprised is the right word, but I mean, you know, this was a game in which the White Sox did a lot of good things, right? And so, I mean, for a manager, and I'm not just talking about Pedro, a lot of managers do this all the time, you know, look for the positives, talk about the positives, hammer home the positives. He didn't seem too happy. I think that, you know, one thing he did say was these are two games and it's only been two games, but it's two games that they probably could have won. And maybe you could argue should have won. So, at least today's with the way that they played. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think everybody's expecting him to be, the rah-rah, hey, let's go talk about all the things we did well. Who cares what the result was? No, he cares what the result is, and I think he saw a game that the White Sox should have won, and he was a little irritated about that.
If any hand up, I admit I questioned Pedro before the game when he had Braden Shumake in the game instead of Paul DeJong, and Braden Shumake went out and did the job with a home run, scored on that run where it was a double steal for him and Nicky Lopez. But what did Pedro see pregame that he told you guys about Braden Shumake that made him want to put him in the game today versus Kenta Maeda?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't necessarily go into the specific about today and, like, you know, he's talking about playing the matchups. I'm sure they had a reason for why this was the day that he was going to play. But what he did say generally was he wants to keep these bench players, you know, looking fresh and make sure that they're not, you know, to use something that Tony La Russa always used to say, he doesn't want them to rust on the bench. It's kind of the same idea. And again, I've seen this from basically every manager I've covered where it can't necessarily in their minds be just, we've got our starters that we're setting on opening day, and those are going to be the guys for the next 160 games. Like, Pedro's reasoning was that he wants these guys to not have to necessarily, you know, go from sitting cold to in the game when they need them to, right? When there's an injury or a pinch hit opportunity or something like that. So the way that you do that will be to make sure that these guys are playing on a fairly regular basis, a relatively regular basis. So, but listen, Shumake, in regards to him specifically, Pedro said that they loved what he did in spring training. And I think that you're seeing an example of a player who does all the things that Pedro wants to see his players do. You know, he was complimenting his defense at playing multiple positions, complimenting his ability to run the bases, and heck, we saw it today, right? So I mean, you know, even after the game, Shumake himself said, yeah, it was good to hit a home run, but I'm not a home run hitter. I'm not necessarily, you know, going up there and making that why I am valuable to a team. He's a guy who wants to do all that other stuff that's asked of him, and I think you saw that in some of the base running today. He talked about having the players at the bottom of the lineup kind of taking pride in the base running because they want to set things up for the guys who, you know, do the swinging at the top in the middle of the order. So I think Shumake probably has not just the attitude but the skill set that Pedro wants to see from a lot of these guys, and A, that's why he made the team, and B, that's why he's already getting some run here in the first couple days of the season.
He might not be a home run hitter, but I don't think he's upset, too, that his first hit is a home run, too. I mean, hey, I'd take it. Shumake, though, we saw some fast play. One of them was, you know, Lopez getting thrown out at second, but Shumake able to score a run. Do you call that stealing home?
Yeah.
So he wasn't credited for a steal of home. The idea was that he went once the ball was thrown. It's splitting hairs, I guess, if you want to, because that play is probably called, right? They're probably calling both you guys go, you know, if you want to boil it down to the simplicity. But in terms of the official scoring, not given a steal of home on that play.
He ran home and scored, which just correct. Sounds lame. I think you get the gist if I say steal, y'all. So not an official steal of home for Braden Shumake. But Heads Up Baseball was able to get that run. We also saw Corey Lee advanced on the wild pitch that Moncada ended up striking out on. We saw even a hit and run too. Lopez moved Shumake to third in that instance before they ended up having that double steal there, so-called kind of double steal. Did Pedro talk a little bit about seeing that play, you know, manifest itself a little bit more? They were actually able to get people, you know, past second base today.
Yeah, he said that he is seeing a lot of the things that he does want to see and that he saw positives today. Now, obviously, again, it's such a small sample size. All you got to do is dial it back to Thursday when you hardly saw any of that because they weren't on base at all. They didn't have a chance really to play that way. But there are other parts of this, you know what I mean? Obviously, when you see the stuff on the base paths, that's obviously kind of the most obvious oh, that's different than what we've seen from the White Sox in years past. But, I mean, think about the number of pitches that Luis Robert Jr. saw today. That is part of what Pedro Grifol has said, is being aggressive, right? That you're putting pressure on the opponent. What I saw, you know, as an example of the way that they want to play, Luis Robert Jr. walks in that at-bat with or that plate appearance, rather, against Alex Lang. He goes to first base, and the pitcher's like, this guy might steal on me. So he throws the ball over to first base, and it ends up going for an error. Robert makes it down to second base. That's not a steal, right? It's an error on the other team. But the idea is it's kind of a forced error by Luis Robert Jr. by just having that as part of his skill set, the threat of being able to do that. And Luis acknowledged after the game that that's something that he's trying to do. The threat of being a base stealer is sometimes just as effective, if not more so, as being a base stealer. But of course, yesterday he told us he also wants to steal some more bases too. So this is part of all of that. Pedro shouted out Moncada busting it for that triple. You know, I think that there's a lot of examples today of what Pedro wanted to see. And just because it's maybe some of the other ones are a little more subtle, but I think that you saw a lot of it today. Didn't equal a win, just kind of as we've been talking about. But if they can continue to play like that, that'll be a very positive sign. I already saw, I think it was when I tweeted, you know, about the play you were talking about with Shoemake going home on the Lopez steal, stolen base attempt, rather. I'm getting some tweets that say, oh, wow, this is more entertaining. This is something to watch. I mean, literally, this is game two. And after everybody, not everybody, but plenty of folks rolled their eyes over all the talk over the offseason. Oh, it'll be more fun to watch. You've got people kind of opening their eyes and saying, oh, I noticed that. That's something a little bit more entertaining. That's a different style. So, again, it's going to be about consistency. They're going to have to do it on a daily basis. And like we saw Thursday, they're going to have to get on base in order to do it in the first place at all.
I brought this up on Thursday. I'll ask Herb first and then Vinny. If you have any response, feel free to just tag along at the end. 19-30 last year in one run games. So we talked and heard a lot about this team wanting to be more respectable, play better defense, play have better pitching, and be in more games. 2 1-run losses. What do you make? Is that them hanging in games or just not being good enough to finish? Are you looking really half glass full, half glass empty? Like, what is the outlook after losing 1-0 and 7-6? You're not able to close out the game, but you're technically still in it the whole time.
It's a tough one to answer because moral victories and taking things like that are going to be part of this year because we know the team's not going to be good at all. So, yeah, it's better to lose close games than get blown out, which looks like it might be happening Monday through Wednesday of next week when the Braves come to town. So, yeah, it's good to stay with the Tigers, but it's also disappointing when you have a 6-3 lead and you lose that. You know, give the home run up there to Marcana, and then the bullpen blows the rest of it. It sucks to have that on your ledger. And the first game, you didn't produce any offense, so that already looks like a bad thing. When your offense isn't working, the game already is like, oh, this is a terrible game. Today, by just scoring 6 runs, even though you lost by the same margin, is a much better game because you produced some runs. You actually had some good at-bats. Luis Robert had some good at-bats. Andrew Vaughn had some good at-bats. And you had team-wide appreciation. And we just talked about the fast stuff that happened today. So, yeah, I'm encouraged that Pedro and his type of baseball will be more conducive to our eyes. But these people who are watching, listening, don't care about that necessarily. They look at 0-2 and they look at, okay, how are we going to win? How is this going to eventually turn into wins if the people at the back end of our bullpen can't close the games out and then we stop scoring runs after the fourth inning?
I mean, listen, you ask, is it half full or half empty? I think the correct answer is there's some water in there. Right. I mean, like it's neither. Right. I mean, I think certainly the first thing to remember is it's just 2 games and it's, you know, we've got a long, long way to go before we're going to be able to determine what this team is going to be like in general over the course of the season. But I think you're seeing both good and bad. You're seeing things. I mean, that's what I wrote about after opening day was good Lord, that pitching was fantastic, and White Sox fans should be thrilled by that. But also, yeah, that offense looked really bad, and you could be upset by that. Today, you've got them doing those things that Pedro wants them to do. You've got Luis Robert Jr. putting on a hell of a show. I mean, you should be standing up and cheering about those couple things, but then you've got the same old things that's dogged them in recent years. You got a bases loaded, one out situation, and nobody can get a run home. You know what I mean? Like, that, there is good, there is bad, there is in between, there's all sorts of stuff, and it's only two games in. So it's very hard to get a read on, like you say, kind of whether the outlook should be positive or negative for the team. It's just going to be, are they going to continue to meet, outlive or fail to meet expectations on such a different number of fronts? And that's why we keep watching and talking about every game, right?
Yeah. I mean, we'll be here for the next 160, right? Hey, there's a lot for this season to develop. L. Lee in the chat saying Soroka is awful. No. I mean, you know, it's a first start. We'll see how it develops. I mean, we can go to the pitcher stats. Thanks, Sarah, for flashing these up. 5 innings for Soroka, 4 earned runs, 7 hits, no Ks, 3 walks. Maeda, 3 1/3, 6 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 Ks, 1 walk. Herb, it seems like you wanted to bring up something about Soroka. I mean, this was our all-star pick, our sneaky White Sox all-star pick.
Yeah, it's his first start, so, you know, he seemed like he was leaving a couple balls up. How did Michael Soroka feel about his outing after the game, Vinny? Because I think without any strikeouts, walking 3 people, and then the start he had, while not positive, he came through in his first White Sox start, to me, is fine. I'm sure he probably was a little harder on himself than I am.
Yeah, he didn't really have much good to say about it. I think the assessment that he gave was he tried to do too much too early. Like, the idea being that the first batter of the game, the second pitch of the game, is a triple. And so now you got a man on third. And so all of a sudden it's like, all right, I gotta get all these guys out a million times in a row here right now to prevent that run from scoring. And he kind of got out of himself a little bit. So I don't think it's exactly how he wanted to go out there. I think he said it took a few innings for him to get settled a little bit. And guess what? That's what we heard from Garrett Crochet the other day too, even though Garrett Crochet had kind of the opposite problem and was awesome, you know, even with that, all that adrenaline. So it's not a problem, I suppose. But the fact that he kind of was still looking for his footing, but nothing bad happened. Michael Soroka is still looking for his footing, and a bunch of bad stuff did happen. So I think, you know, Soroka's a veteran. He probably should know a little better than to have that happen. But first game in your new home stadium, and what was the first thing he said to us at spring training, right? That there, everybody in the locker room has something to prove. He's probably one of them, having not really had a lot of action in, what, the last half decade. So it wasn't positive in his mind, even though, yeah, he settled down. And to get out of that with only 3 when the first 5 guys reach and look like they're going to just blow him out of the game right away, it's not good. But it's not as bad as it could have been, I suppose.
Did someone bring up Garrett Crochet? Can we talk about Garrett Crochet? Do I have an excuse to talk about Garrett Crochet? There was a mic'd up video that the White Sox put out of Ethan Katz being mic'd up and Garrett Crochet being mic'd up. And I found it hilarious. After his first inning, Ethan Katz is like, all right, you're going to have to control. Like, he was like, all right, here's the next 3 guys coming up. The last guy's Canna. We see how great Canna is today, how impressive he is. And he's like, all right, you're going to have to go out and control the zone, really go out and attack him. And Mark Canna, I think, struck out 3 times against Garrett Crochet. Like, it is just so interesting to see, like, obviously Soroka is extremely talented. We saw that 2019. Like, that composure of Crochet to just go out and do it. Like, yes. I mean, Soroka's been here before. Kopech is a guy that's been here before. Composure is not an easy thing to have. And I'm just still, 2 days later, still massively impressed by Garrett Crochet's composure. I'll take a break because I'm getting off the wheels here. I got more thoughts on Michael Soroka's start, and then we'll wrap this up, put a nice bow on it. And we'll be back tomorrow at 1:10 as the Sox take on the Tigers. We'll talk about any impending storylines from that game as well. But Herb, you want to let us know about Wisconsin Innovation?
Yeah, nothing says summer like hanging out with your people, whether you're at the ball game, like I was at the ball game today, or just a cookout, or just chilling with your people, like Landon Kugel's Summer Shandy. I had 2 or 3 today at the Guaranteed Rate Club at the Guaranteed Rate Field. And let me tell you, they have this slogan called, it's better out the ballpark. reluctantly, I have to agree with the White Sox. Man, it was on tap. It was cold, crisp. It is better at the ballpark. So I know they're saying, hey, Herb, I know summer's here. Shandy season is here. But what can I drink otherwise when summer shandy's not in stock? Well, I got you. You can drink their original, their light lager, their Lakeside Cherry, their Juicy Peach, their Berry Weiss, as Sean is holding up right now, their Northwoods Amber, their Dark Lager, or the one that I'm drinking right now, their Sunset Wheat. And the Honey Weiss, real Wisconsin honey, Sean. Ooh,
that's a honey is a Wisconsin innovation. There wasn't honey before Wisconsin.
I won't say that, but whatever.
They invented bees.
So you know it's good if it's got real Wisconsin honey. And if you tried any of these beers, you know that Leinenkugel brings the flavor for whatever occasion that you are celebrating. For over 150 years, Leinenkugel has combined German brewing traditions with Wisconsin innovation. You don't have to pick just one. Leinenkugel's popular variety packs come in four flavors for you to try and enjoy. Flavor life's simple moments with Leinenkugel's, the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Go to Leine.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's Leine.com/CHGO. Or pick up Leinenkugel's pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Leinenkugel's, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes.
Yes.
Were you gonna jump in, Vinny?
I mouthed it because sometimes there's a little bit of a delay and I didn't want it to be delayed. So I just tried to time it so I could mouth it and people would be like, oh, he's doing it in spirit at the ballpark.
Wisconsin innovation, no more delay on call-ins. So don't worry. You can always participate. I also think it'd be great just for like a White Sox worker to walk by as you're doing this hit and you're just doing a Hawk impersonation going, yes.
I mean, the amount of Hawk impressions that get done during the game, I don't think anyone would bat an eye at it.
You gone. All right. We want to also let you know about our friends over at, oh, this is us, CHGO. Look at that. We are very proud to work at CHGO, and we are looking to take care of you, the diehard fan. I know that, you know, some people might disagree and say that Herb doesn't make it fun to be a White Sox fan, but I think you do, Herb. Thank you. Think you do a great job. Yeah.
Oh, look at my guy. Oh,
whoa, Lawrence. Okay. Oh, all right. Lawrence is screaming.
Oh, Lawrence hates people. Okay.
Anyways, we make it fun
Lawrence,
to be
that a Lawrence. Yeah. Off camera, you'll see him.
We make it fun to be a fan.
Thanks, Lawrence.
We had fun over at Ballpark Pub on opening day where we did the live pregame show. Got to meet a ton of diehards there and, you know, see the community that we're trying to grow. And we see a ton of new names in the chat. So if you haven't subscribed yet, make sure you're subscribing. Hit that like button. We also got merch over at chglocker.com. You can become a diehard as well. Vinny puts out a weekly newsletter about the White Sox on Monday, and now that it's the start of the season, that is behind a paywall. When you sign up to, you get a choice of a shirt at the CHGO Locker. We got two brand new opening day releases with the Sunday Fun Day one and the Defend the Southside one, along with the Chicago collection that dropped earlier this month. So if you are looking to elevate your fandom, become a diehard today. Check out allchgo.com. And we have takeovers coming where you get to go to the ballpark with us on May 27th. We got the 110 game against the Blue Jays. On June 24th, we got the 710 game against the Dodgers. And then on August 9th at 710, we have a firework game with the Chicago Cubs. So if you are looking to have some fun with us, come out to a takeover, head over to the link in the description and you can buy a takeover ticket today. You can also buy a pass where you get one of the opening day shirts and you get to come to all three takeovers. So if you are looking to just buy them all at once and get a shirt, I think you get a discount as well on going to all three. So go check out the link in the description. So it's fun to be a fan. It's fun to be a part of CHGO. So if you are looking to support us, check out the link in the description. Michael Soroka, I want to bring up that mainly he's been a sinker guy throughout his career, threw mostly his slider today, 23 sliders out of 77 pitches, 21 four-seamers. That's a new pitch for him or a newer pitch that he's relying more on, 18 sinkers and then 15 changeups. I think the biggest thing is his velocity wasn't really there, down about a tick and about a half tick, 0.5 miles per hour from where he was last year, and just wasn't getting whiffs today. He's not typically a whiff guy, but he usually gets more than three on 29 swings, and I think the biggest thing is just they were pretty meatballish when weren't, you know, balls, basically. So I think that he can be sharper. I think that there is a higher ceiling for Soroka. A little bit of a colder day, and there's probably obviously some jitters and some anxiousness that starts when the first guy triples, and it seems like he settled down a little bit. So this isn't the best first outing for Soroka. I don't think this is what he wanted, but we'll see how his outings develop, because he is working with a new pitch mix, and we did see him be extremely effective in spring training.
And luckily for him, his next start won't be versus a former team. His next start will be versus Kansas City Royals. He'll he'll downshift a little bit and just chill out with the Royals instead of facing that fucking Braves thing. Not that is dumb.
His former team, just everyone else's former team.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right. Everyone else is a Royal. All right. I had one comment that I wanted to get to, too. SoxHap saying, we can't even draft higher than 10th in 2025 thanks to the new rule. That's the one thing that I am just a little bit worried about. This team's now 0-2. If we are predicting them to be, you know, one of the five worst teams in Major League Baseball, it's not going to be super helpful for their draft positioning. I know that there hasn't been a comment on that so far from either Chris Getz or Pedro Grifol, because you're just so early into the season.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I know that's on a ton of White Sox fans' minds, and we see how, you know, important this draft could be. If they had a top five pick, they'll have a top five pick in 2024, but, you know, they possibly could get a guy like Chase Burns, who's just an absolute ace with the top five pick. Like, this team could be rewarded for being bad, and it doesn't seem like they will.
That's what you're looking at right now with the Baltimore Orioles, is why you do the, you know, being bad for a while. They had top picks from being bad and losing 100 games. You had brought them up. They had lost a consecutive 100 games like in 2017 and 18.
I think it was 17, 18, and 19.
And so this is what you get. You get all the good players that they have on their team, and now they're ascending to the top of the AL East. The White Sox won't have that luck because, as Sean says, the dumbass rule where you're a big market team, you can't pick in the lottery 2 years consecutive, and you get kicked out to the highest they can pick is 11. It's bad. Even though they're going to be really bad this year. I know those Oakland A's are going to be worse than them, but that's the only team I know that's going to be worse than them.
So the Rockies.
I don't know, man. Oh, yeah, they are in a tough division.
That's a real tough division.
That's a good point. So those Rockies and those A's. But we got third locked down. No one's coming for third to worse.
Yeah. Hey, take that. All right. Any other storylines that you think we're missing, Vinny? We obviously have a game tomorrow that we'll be able to recap and react to. Hopefully the Sox can hit their first win. But anything from today's game that you think we might have not touched on?
Just a kind of a fun nugget from Luis Robert Jr., who said, you know, as we talk about his continued evolution, said, you know, some of the homers and certainly some of the at-bats, the lengthy at-bats and laying off pitches that he was able to do today, the product of a specific drill he was doing during the offseason, in which he would focus on one-fourth, he was using the word quadrant, one-quarter of the strike zone, and unless the pitch was there, he wouldn't swing. That was the drill he was doing. So apparently that's helped him out now in practice, and not only does it pay off in terms of not swinging at balls, but it allows him to swing at the pitch that he's expecting to and hit it a million miles an hour like he did twice today.
I'm assuming it's did he talk about what quadrant it is? Like, is he just looking to look at anything up?
I would imagine it rotates. You're doing, you know, pick a quadrant and don't swing at anything outside there, then pick a new one, then pick another. Yeah.
Got you.
It was a drill. It was a drill, not an approach. Yeah.
Got you. I didn't know if you were saying like he was looking down and in all the time when he was going up against someone. You're like a rotating quadrant where he's trying
would
to
be my guess. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. No. Good clarification there. I mean, hey, I mentioned it when you were talking about it. Like, obviously, the Moncada strikeouts, disappointing because he is a guy that has the profile to walk. But Lang's got some nasty stuff. Those last two pitches that he swung and missed at were fairly nasty, and Lang ends up throwing the same nasty stuff to Robert. And hey, it seemed like the drill paid off. The guy got on base four times today. So
and he started off that at bat with 0-2. Yeah, also, right. Like he swung at those pitches and it was 0-2, and he drew a walk from there. Like that probably 450-foot home runs are great, but you're going against Kenta Maeda. That was probably the best at bat he had all day. The walk he had right there versus Lang.
We also saw, obviously, Braden Shumake get his first MLB hit. Wasn't his major league debut, but we did see Jordan Leisure come out. Any talk after the game for Jordan Leisure? It was kind of a run-of-the-mill. Nothing really happened. Walked a guy. I think let up a hit. Struck out a guy. Kind of Michael Kopech-y of Jordan Leisure, if you can make a joke. Any talk, though, on Leisure's debut?
I mean, we talked to him. He said he was very excited and, very smiley, and I think he had to be reminded not to throw another pitch with the ball from his first career strikeout. So a little fun nugget there. But yeah, I mean, listen, I think if you're talking about a run of the mill, regular, uneventful outing for a guy making his major league debut, that's pretty good. Right. I mean, you've got a guy coming in there showing maybe that he's just as dependable as some of the veterans and, showing you kind of why he made this team. It doesn't always have to be, blow you away to be impressive. All you got to do is go out there and not give up a run, which that's what he did.
I just want to wrap on this. Melissa brought this up in the chat and we talked a little bit about before you joined. Did Pedro talk about the way that the bullpen was sequenced? Because I think we looked at opening day as a high leverage game, just because it was a one run situation. Obviously they were down, but we saw Davey Garcia. We saw Michael Kopech. Today we end up seeing Leon come in. We saw him come in the ninth on opening day, but we saw him come in the seventh. Not the best outing for Leon, but any talk of how the bullpen was deployed? Cause I don't know if Herb and I were the biggest fans of that specifically.
There was some talk of specifics there a little bit. Obviously, he had to use a lot of bullpen pitchers today because Soroka only goes five innings. And then obviously they went an extra inning on top of that. So we saw a lot of relief arms. He was asked why not Tim Hill at the start of that seventh inning rather than coming in later because he had some lefty hitters at the beginning there. And he said basically, you're looking at that part of the Tigers lineup and you're thinking not just who's there, but what they can do with their pinch hitters too. And so they were most comfortable throwing Leon out there in the event of pinch hitters being used or, to preemptively counter pinch hitters being used against a lefty. That's why they went with Leon there. They liked that matchup the best. Obviously, it's easy to not like something when it doesn't go the correct way, but I would imagine that you're going to continue to see Davey Garcia in those, what they refer to as high leverage situations, because you've done it twice in a row now, right? You saw him in the one run game on Thursday. You saw him in the extra inning today. So he seems like a guy who they're confident in late, but you're going to see a lot of different guys. Obviously, John Brebbia came in to pitch that ninth inning. I think he's a late inning guy. Steven Wilson, Tim Hill, you're going to see these guys kind of utilized all over the place, I think.
Yeah.
Wasn't it in that ninth inning or that inning that Leon came in, the lefty that we're referring to is Riley Green. They're not taking him out, I don't think, if Tim Hill goes in the game. That's, I just have a qualm with that because he's their three hitter, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're not taking Riley Green if Tim Hill comes in the game out for a lesser hitter than him. So, I just have
Carpenter's a lefty too. He was
a disagreement
him.
There with Pedro and how he, utilize his bullpen there, and then his excuse for, or not his excuse, his explanation of what happened there.
Yeah, and two, I mean, I don't want to get too dorky, but just even, I brought it up earlier, like Steven Wilson going up against two lefties as well, where he throws mostly sweepers, like sweepers are pitches that get hammered by lefties and they get righties out. So, I mean, that's the way they chose to deploy the bullpen. I didn't like it. We'll see how that unfolds. I mean, there's nothing really we can do about it. That's going to be do it for the CHGO White Sox postgame show. We'll be back tomorrow after tomorrow's game. Starts at 1:10. The pitching matchup is
Jack Flaherty versus Eric Fitty.
Forgot he was a Tiger.
No, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a Cardinal.
He was Oriole. Yeah, Jack Flaherty. I feel like he was back.
Blue Jay, yeah. Hey, now he's a Tiger.
Him and Ethan Katz going to do their secret handshake.
Yeah, probably. I think Lucas Giolito's probably off, right? Maybe he's, I think he still anything. Lives in the city.
Yeah.
He'll come visit his friend. Max Fried's coming to Chicago at some point. Maybe he's got the day off. Maybe we could just reunite Harvard-Westlake. Anyways, that's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at ActorWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show. And you can follow us at CHGO_White Sox. Make sure you're hitting that thumbs up button and subscribe to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We'll talk to you tomorrow after the game. Goodbye. We all silly like the mayor.